Feral Audio.
It's time for another episode of Drew Drogi's Minor Revelations. Happy week. I'm going to just start saying that to people. Happy week. They won't think I'm at all disturbed when I say that. Okay. I'm going to talk about something. I really don't have this very well organized. Aren't you excited? I really hope that I sort of bring up something with respect and love, because that's what I mean. That's where I'm meaning to come from. And not just to complain and bitch and stir a cauldron and just be like, and come off like a, just a huge brat. But I just have something I just need to complain about and vent about. And it's something that I've sort of talked about a lot before, but it just, yeah, every now and then you just get like, ugh. I feel very lucky to get to do what I do with my life. And every time I get hired for a job, I really do feel like it's, you know, it's lovely. I love the money. I love the experience. I've been lucky that I have probably count on one hand experiences that were bad on sets of TV shows and movies and stuff. And so it's usually really great and wonderful. But we just have to get better and more gay people on TV. I know that this is not a new thing to say, but I'm sorry that the funniest people I know are gay, and just like, why can't these characters be funny? And not just, we need more people on TV who are gay and out. We need more characters that are real human beings, real people that talk and sound like real gay people, and not this these collection of jokes or really boring people that say that they're gay. And so I have gone to auditions over the last couple of years, and I walk into the room and it's a room full of people who all need their own shows, who all could do this terrible thing that we're auditioning for. And the dialogue is, it's either that we are drinking Cosmos and carrying purses in heels. Now, I know that there are gay men that act like this and do this, and hooray for them, enjoy your life. I don't want to celebrate those people. Okay. I mean, on a level of like, on a human level, sure. On an entertainment level, that's not what I think that we always need to be selling. Now, I will, and I have, and I do, and if you've seen me on TV, I've definitely done that. And I always have to tell myself there is someone in the world who does this. But all I know is that my 70-year-old stepfather drinks Cosmopolitans, you know, in South Carolina. That's who drinks Cosmopolitans. I know there are gay and genderqueer and trans people who carry purses, and that's wonderful, and if that's how you express yourself, great, of course. But that's not just a thing that most gay men do, carry purses or wear, you know, extravagant makeup or always have a joke, the laughs, the crazy, terrible puns. It's like we write puns. Or we have these gay roles that are just like, hey, dude, I like guys. You know, pass the beer. I'm a person. And they're really boring. And I don't blame straight people for this. This is not straight people's fault. I am looking at gay people in power, gay people who have the ability to write more nuanced, authentic, flawed, interesting gay people for us to play. And it's when I get to write on things, that's what I want to do. And I want to play human beings that live an experience, that are not just these jokes or just these ideas or just these things that like someone you've never met before. And you know, I really think as gay men, we're afraid of being seen. We're afraid of being real. We're afraid of being vulnerable. We're afraid of being hated. So we write like a really silly joke of a person so that everybody feels comfortable. But the reality is, it makes everyone feel gross, and it makes everyone feel a little bit uncomfortable, as opposed to looking inside and saying, how am I kind of broken? How am I fucked up? How am I a human being? And that's how everyone, gay, straight, and everything in between, will relate to you. And I just say we have to do better. We must do better. And I'm talking to gay people. I'm not, yeah. Straight people who are working in this industry, there are plenty of horrible straight people, of course, absolutely. But for the most part, straight white men who are working in this industry and this state in the game, who are, they are so afraid, on the most part, to make a generalization, they are so afraid of not being woke. They're the first ones to do all the research on gay people and on women. And they have guilt about, like, oh, I don't treat people of color or women the right way. They are trying to be aware. And so I there are a lot of gay people in power that think they know how gay people talk and behave, and that just don't, that need to maybe go to a cocktail party and meet some who aren't living in bajillion-dollar mansions. And, and we had these shows on TV, like, when we had Looking on the air, it was the only gay show on the air. And we hated it because we expected it to represent every gay person ever. And no TV show can do that. So we need more. We need more shows that represent, so that Looking can be held up to the light as a TV show, not as the gay TV show. We have reality shows like Fire Island and the matchmaker thing, whatever, that Robert Sepulveda show. I don't even know what it's called. Who cares? But that's happening. Okay, that should be allowed to exist. That is not my taste. That is not my at all what I'm interested in. But we love reality TV, and we should have that. We do have some amazing things on the air. We have Search Party, which is incredible. We on TBS, watch Search Party. Watch Throwing Shade. Brian Safi's done this show before. And it's a brilliant show that's not only pro-gay, but it's pro-women. And it's above all of that. It's fucking brilliant and hilarious. And, difficult people, not different people. I don't know what different people is. Difficult people, that's what I meant to say, is another wonderful, great gay show. So it's happening, and there are things that we are changing that, but we have to get better. We have to do better. We still have to keep pushing forward. And I know there are way bigger problems in the world, and I know that we have a lot happening, but this is something that is kind of inexcusable among ourselves. Films have an even bigger problem. Last year, the only mainstream films that showed gay people were Moonlight, which we know and loved, of course, and Star Trek. That was it. That was the only depiction of gay people in a major motion picture last year. People were complaining this year that no gay actors were nominated for Oscars. Openly gay actors were nominated for Oscars. There were no roles. There were no roles for them to get nominated. So we have to fix this. And thank God for the internet, for just sort of breaking all these rules. I watched Brian Alvarez's show, The Gay and Wondrous Life of Caleb Gallo, about people who are confused in their sexuality, in their gender, who are all shades of gray. And it's hilarious, and it's brilliant, and it's where we are. Watch Jimmy Fallon's show, Go-Go Boy Interrupted, where you're watching these, these great examples of interesting, flawed, really damaged, funny gay people that we all know. Let's not be afraid to be human beings. And I know it's going to take some giant movement. It's going to take a Bridesmaids type film to really change the script. Because, well, remember in early 2011 when people didn't think women could make a movie, a comedy, and Bridesmaids happened, and it was like, oh, we actually need this and want this, and shame on us for not doing this earlier. So it's important that we create, that we support each other, that we use each other in our own work. We listen to each other. We really reflect the truth, and then we lift each other up. And I'm currently available for projects. Well, hello, guys. How are you?
We're good.
Great. I'm sitting here with my friends Gina Torricilla, Julie, and McCullough. How are you?
Good. I had a whole Red Bull, so I have a personality.
Oh,
today.
My God. I love it. Do you drink Red Bull regularly?
Yeah, it's one of my very, very embarrassing things about myself is that I used to be a coffee snob and now I can only drink Red Bull.
Really? Do you not, you don't drink coffee at all anymore?
I don't. I try and I don't like it anymore. It's really bizarre.
I have 2 cases of Red Bull you can have. I'm not kidding.
Really?
Are they
donated to the
regular
theater and I can't take it.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's about, I can't stand Red Bull. I can't stand the feeling after Red Bull. And I drink coffee a lot, but there's something at Red Bull that makes me feel really, really, really crazy.
Yeah.
When I'm doing it, but maybe, you know, it's just the chemistry, your body chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
Do you drink the sugar?
No, I drink the sugar-free one.
Sugar-free one.
This is regular. Damn.
Uh-huh.
It's that really irrational thing in your brain that's like, yes, I'm drinking Red Bull, but at least I'm not getting all those calories. You know what I mean?
Oh, right.
I'm
exactly.
Super dying.
Super. Yeah. And we all are. We're all doing this. We make those negotiations every day.
And they're completely fabricated in your own head.
Oh, yeah, you know? Of course. Like, I would never do Red Bull. I don't do soda anymore, but I eat bacon every day. I drink way too much coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And I have whiskey almost every night. So it's like, come on, Drew, what are you doing? You know, enjoy your life.
Well, you sound like a Republican. Well,
oh, I am.
Yeah, good for you.
You guys didn't know that. Oh, I'm very Republican.
Yes.
Very conservative. That's what I want to talk about today. How great things are going in the world.
Great.
And America's great again, finally.
I gotta go.
No, the doors are locked. Wouldn't that be weird if you found out that, like, secretly I was, like, a hardcore Republican?
Yes.
And that would be...
Well... You mean like you were, and everything else was a sham, like you were pretending to be Drew Drogi?
No, I was me, and I had all my thoughts, and then I also I voted straight down the ticket. Like, well, yeah, and, you know, I'm just a log cabin, like, that's exactly how I feel. It would be horrible. It'd be so sad. But I am... I know this is not what we're going to talk about, but I am fascinated by Republicans, and I really want to hear from them. I want to hear, like, I try not to shut it up because I'm always like, what? Explain it to me. Because it's the actor in me that wants to know all sides. I'm like, I want to know. And then there are just these weird walls that just...
The logic does not make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
There is no logic. I have a secret. I have a theory.
What is it?
Ooh. I have a theory.
What is it?
I think that if you got a bunch of them drunk... Seriously, got a bunch of them drunk and really relaxed and mellow. And you said, you really do think white people are better than everyone else, don't you? They would say, yes, we do.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. No, I think you're right.
I don't give a crap if they say they're not racist.
Right.
I don't
give a crap.
I don't believe them. Ultimately, deep down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think a lot of it is they don't know that they're racist. I don't think that they are overtly lying, but I will say that. I mean, the only thing I can equate it to is when I was growing up and not knowing that I was gay, but everyone else did. But I was like, no, I'm not, because I wasn't aware of that part of my brain. You know, I just didn't acknowledge it. So I wonder, you know.
Well, culturally, the Republican ideal, and they pretty much only hang out with each other, right?
I mean, right.
So it feels to me like that race of you saying they don't even know is kind of like, I can never get this... parable or whatever it's called, right? But when somebody asks a fish how is the water, and they go, what's water?
Right.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah. Yeah.
It's like,
exactly.
They have no idea.
And then also, what the thing is that, like, I think conservative ideals are totally, like, respectable. And I really, if you're a true conservative, it's like, live and let live.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to talk about everything to everybody. We have a pride. I want to live. The definition of conservative is being, you know, a little bit more private and withdrawn. And I'm like, great. Mm-hmm. I have total respect for that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the opposite of, I just want to say to so many people, I'm like, you know, you're not conservative if you're telling people how to live their lives. If you're passing laws that promote, kicking other people out of places,
right.
That's not a conservative belief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not, you know? And so it's like, so that's the thing too. It's like the problem with the whole definition that they don't even know. And, you know, that's because I'm like somebody who's truly, I mean, I think about, like, my grandparents are like truly, like, they're like true Christians and true conservatives, and they hate Donald Trump. No, like, nobody's business, because they're like, and they, this is the first time ever in their lives that they didn't vote for the president this year, because they're like, we don't like either one of them. And I'm not dying knowing that I voted for either one of those people for different reasons. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I respect that on that level. You're 87 and 88 years old and you are true to your word. Like, you really are like, this person is not, because they're like, he's not a Christian. He's not a conservative. Those are things that are important to us. Mm-hmm. And I at least respect that. But now it's like this bizarre, you know, freak show that's happening, whether you're like, I don't even know what you guys even believe anymore.
Right. Yeah.
It's not even like you believe, you can't say you believe in Christian values.
Right. They need a different word for themselves.
Yeah, they really do.
Not, I don't know what
And you're right. It is like, I just don't want other people to have what I have.
Right.
That's really all it is.
Right.
It's just like, I've worked all my life. They believe the American dream is true for everyone, that everyone has had the same opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's something that, like, you know, I've gotten into with my family. They believe that, you know, it's America. Everyone gets the opportunity. Everyone can go to college. Everyone can get the same as for a job. Everyone can do it. So why don't you? Don't be lazy. You know, and you're like, oh, it's so, you don't realize that the system is designed against a lot of people that are not white.
Do you realize how, and I'm not the first person to point this out, but how brutal it would be for someone to look at themselves and go, oh, I actually didn't do the things I think I did. Like, I am not, in other words, showing someone their own privilege is one of the hardest things
Absolutely.
For somebody to look at. No one wants to look at that. It's really hard.
And even in, you know, like a lot of people talk about within like minority culture that they don't want anybody to succeed because it's showing that they could have too. You know what I mean? Like, they don't want, don't want your brother to go to college because that means you could have done it too had you worked really hard. Mm-hmm. It's the same sort of, I mean, it's on the flip side. It's like, yeah, you don't want to admit that it was because of your decisions or lack thereof that you are where you are.
Right.
You'd much rather just blame other and outside forces. It's easier to say, well, I would have, you know, I could have blah, 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 if only, you know, the world weren't against me, or if, you know, on some side of like, well, I lost my job to some black guy, so therefore I, you know, or whatever. And you're like, well, maybe you weren't good at your job. Or maybe, you know, that black guy deserved the job and deserved more opportunity because of, you know, they don't, it's very hard to look at the fact that, like, you are personally responsible for anything.
Or, in the case of the Republican side, not responsible in that you're solidly middle class, you have a nice house, and you want to say it's because of what I've done, not because of how I was born.
Absolutely.
And so when you say, and then you say, well, and they're like, a black person could do what I did, you know, and it's like, well, would you have wanted to overcome what they had to overcome? They're like, well, I probably could have.
Right,
you
know exactly. I mean? Like, I know, and you're like,
don't know.
Okay, cool, cool.
They're like,
keep thinking
sorry
that way.
I was born this way, but I could have done it if I were them. And it's like, I don't know that
I know.
People in my circle try to use me against me all the time. And I'll tell you why. Because I came from a very poor family. I was the first person to go to college in my family, and I was ostracized by them.
Wow.
I was ostracized by my own family because I worked two jobs to put myself through school. And because it was something I chose.
Uh-huh.
I chose to do it, and I chose to work really hard.
So you used to be black.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Thus the curl in the back. But you know, yeah, and here I am, this white lady who people see as this privileged woman who's had a privileged life. No, she has not. And I can tell you stories, but I won't here.
Sure.
But then when they put barriers in front of me all the time, psychological ones, put downs, things like that. Put myself through school, get my diploma, my undergraduate degree. And then it was the whole, you think you're better than us.
Yeah.
You think you're better than us, don't you? And then I just became ostracized. I rarely speak to them unless I have to because they don't want to talk to me.
Right.
Because I educated myself.
Right.
It's fascinating. And a lot of...
and you showing up is reminding them of what they didn't do.
Correct.
And they don't want to be reminded of that. They want to sort of live among the same.
Right.
I just want to go
and
on record and say
company.
That I am doing much better than I should be for how hard I've worked. Like, I am not aware of it in myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just want to put that out there.
Yeah, no, I get it.
I
straddle that line as well. There are times I'm like, I've worked really hard to get it. I'm also like, yeah, but for me, yeah, going to college was never not an option. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I always knew I was going to get, you know, I always knew even in my struggles in my 20s living out here when I had no money, I knew that I wasn't going to starve. Right. I knew that I could make a phone call and have money. And I'm at a certain point proud that I stopped relying on that. And, you know, so I definitely have a lot of upper middle class privilege for sure.
Yeah.
That I was like, well, yeah, that was taken care of. And in a way that, you know, I have friends and know stories of people that like haven't had that. So, yes, I totally.
The scariest part about it, what's going on, they keep talking about how divisiveness, it's like that word just doesn't even mean anything anymore. It's so like ubiquitous right now. Mm-hmm. But like the scary thing is we're all talking to each other and they're all talking to each other. And how many people are actually having a conversation with the people we're talking about?
Where
would that even take place?
To bring back to what I was, you know, from the beginning and where we even got on this is like, I would love to have somebody on the show who is a Republican or conservative. I don't think those words are the same anymore. I can't even say they're the same anymore. But hear the perspective because I really do want to know. So if you are out there and listening and then send me a message. I want to hear from you because I really do. Because it's like, I scream into a vacuum. We live in LA. We can go outside and just, we all know that everyone kind of on some general level feels the same way mm-hmm. that we all feel mm-hmm. vaguely at least, about what's happening in the world. And that's comforting, just like it's comforting to go, I know for my family and, you know, in South Carolina to walk outside and feel the same way, you mm-hmm. know, on the other side. So I get it. I get it. Anyway, I want to hear from you guys. Talk to me.
Fascinating.
It is.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. I guess.
Yeah.
Go.
I was thinking about this for a while, and I was inspired because I'm a big fan of this show.
Drew. Oh, well, thank
no
you.
One else has said
thank
that
you.
So far, but I will say
no. You're one of the very few.
I'm saying it too. Wait,
for
piggyback.
Long time listener, first time guest.
I'm a huge fan of yours, and it meant a lot that you listened to it, and that's why I was like, get Julian on the show.
Yeah, I love it. And one of the things that's when I was driving over here that I remembered a story you told that really I think encapsulates like the theme of what you're trying to do here that it really wonderfully and the whole thing is pretty coherent, but there's one story that sticks out, and that's when you were on a horrible date. Got too drunk and then saw an old acquaintance at a party and pretended that you were at that party on purpose.
Uh-huh.
And I related to that story so hard. And I was like,
do you have a similar story or?
Well, of being full of shit. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But yeah. I was like, that's the kind of thing that I want to tell where I'm like, you know, it made me go, wow, that's so embarrassing to tell.
Oh,
you know?
It was really embarrassing to tell.
So this one, I wanted to go a little older because I feel like it's a cop out to do childhood stories, but mm-hmm. I decided to do this one anyway because it really is an indicator. Because the story I'm about to tell that happened when I was a kid, I've done this again 1,000 times and just don't remember every instance. You know
sure.
what I mean? But
okay.
So
I can't wait.
In fifth grade, I went to elementary school at Douglas Elementary. It's now the Harvey Milk Academy. It was in Castro in San Francisco.
Well, that sounds disgusting. Oh. They should stop that.
And so we went 1 week that year. We went on a summer camp thing in like the Redwoods or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Whatever. And so it was like, you know, we stayed in cabins and everything. And it was like really exciting and different. And I'd never done anything like it. And anyway, they were doing, they were like nature hikes and, the park rangers would tell the kids, like, this is what a butterfly looks like and shit like that. So I'm on this tour and I end up in the wrong one. Like, I wasn't paying attention and I went into the morning one and I was supposed to be in the afternoon one or something like that. And we're on this nature hike with the park ranger. And we get to one of the, like, what do you call it? Points of interest in mm-hmm. the hike, right? And it's a huge redwood stump. And the inside of the stump is completely hollowed out and it got burned out. But the outside of the stump was perfect. Like the bark and everything looked beautiful.
Okay.
So he said, does anybody here have any idea how the inside of this tree could burn completely without damaging the outside? And you know, we're all 10 years old and thinking, and in my head, I remember this clear as day. I thought, I bet the roots got really hot and it burned the inside of the tree out. But I didn't say it, because if I was wrong and you're 10 and you say it in that situation, it's
mortified.
Like,
you sound like an
mortified.
Idiot.
Yeah.
Really
it's like
dumb.
I'm never going to finger somebody at prom if I say that. Right. So I keep it to myself, right? Uh-huh. We finish the hike, whatever, we come back. Now it's my turn to actually go on the same hike, but it's a different park ranger. So we go on the hike, we get
to the
tree.
So the park ranger said that's what happened?
Yes.
After
he explained. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
So the park ranger said indeed.
He exactly said that. He said the roots caught fire, it burned the inside of the tree and hollowed it out, but the outside still looks perfect.
That's crazy.
Yeah. That is crazy.
So.
And I would, that's one of those things that I would feel like an idiot now at 40 years old being like, maybe that's what happened, but maybe, but
oh,
I'm
still,
but
I wouldn't say it out loud.
I'd be afraid of, like, is that even a thing that could happen? Or do I sound like I'm made out of cartoons?
Well, one positive thing I remember in that moment being like, I can't believe I knew that. I am as smart as I think I am. You know what I mean? Like,
that's
I remember
right.
being very proud of myself, even though I didn't say it out loud. So then I go on the one I'm supposed to later that afternoon, and we get to the same tree. And he says, does anybody here know how this tree could be hollowed out from the inside and the outside looks perfect? And I acted. I remember acting like a little unsure and like kind of
so
raised my
good.
Hand like, I have this. I mean, can I take a crack at it kind of thing?
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, yeah, you have nobody else raises their hand. He goes, yes. What's your name? I go, my name's Julian. I don't know. Maybe the roots burned and like. You know, and I do the whole thing, but like, I don't know the answer.
Oh.
Have a shtick.
And he goes, wow, we've been giving this hike for 15 years and no kid has gotten this right. And the other kids were like, holy shit. And I was like, I'm going to be a park ranger.
You're
like,
going to finger somebody. Yeah. You're going to finger somebody at prom now.
Oh, yeah.
It was worth it.
They were like, stretch those, do your finger stretches.
Stretch them.
And I remember just like swelling with so much pride.
Yeah.
And I was totally full of shit. I mean, I totally got that answer and then just
right.
said it. And here's the thing. The only thing that could make that worse is that I didn't even have that idea the first time and just completely stole it and then was like, you know,
right.
taking all the credit for it. But I rationalized that I did know the answer, so it's the same. That
I
totally bullshitted
yeah,
it, you
sure,
know?
Sure.
And so it's that like fine line of like, I'm not being straightforward here, but I also feel like I'm okay
you
in
also
what I did.
You also want the satisfaction. You want to replay time.
Yeah.
You want to go back in time and be like, oh, if I'd done this on the first hike
right.
and guessed it authentically and gotten it right, that would have made me feel so good.
Well,
right.
that's true. It was like
and
a little do-over
so,
for yourself.
Yeah, it was like a do-over.
Oh, mm-hmm. I can do this and repeat this feeling, even though now I feel gross because I know the answer's right.
Yeah.
But I totally get that. I remember, I'm just trying to think of like, I there was a time playing Trivial Pursuit with my family, and I had gone through and learned mm-hmm. a lot of the answers
memorized
ahead
them.
Of time.
No.
And yeah, a couple of them. And then that, and I just was amazing. My family, and also like, my family always assumed that I knew a lot more than I did because I was always upstairs quietly reading.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom would always be like, he knows about blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I didn't really even know about it. But I remember there was some answer about Huey Long that I knew.
And
I was
and like you're...
Huey Long. My mom was like, that's right. Drew knows about, and I was like, I still don't, he was shot, right? Was it Huey Long? He was like a.
I'm not even sure, but
famous
like.
Famous.
Who thinks a kid knows
he
about
that? Southern racist.
He was a Southern racist who was, I think he was shot at some point.
Yeah. But didn't he, is he the one who, he was the governor who stood in front of the school and said, this will not be segregated? Was it him?
It may have been.
I think that was him.
It
he
may
was
have
the
been
guy.
Him. Okay.
So well, now I
good.
Feel like mine.
No.
It will not be segregated, though? Or it won't be integrated?
Integrated. Oh, my
okay.
God. I used the word. Yeah.
Okay.
It will not be integrated.
Like, okay, great. Okay.
I think that was him.
Okay, okay.
Well, now I feel
I
like mine wasn't
right.
embarrassing enough, and I'm going to think of another one.
No, but that is.
But
and
I
want to
say that, like, that's been my character ever since, is, like, I will totally take that shortcut. I will totally, like, you know what I mean? I'll do it when it's on my terms kind of thing. And, uh-huh. like, you know, I just wish I had the guts to be wrong more.
Yeah.
You know?
I wonder what that
or
is.
Or the guts
about.
To be right and speak up more.
Yeah.
Because you knew in your heart, you knew the answer
or
the first time.
Yeah.
The guts to say, I already heard that answer, I cheated.
Yeah, exactly.
those are the guts I really wish I had. And
yeah.
I, yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
I just know that there are things that just fall out of my mouth that I know I didn't say originally, that mm-hmm. my friend of mine maybe has said. And it's such an added step to like give credit where credit's due. And sometimes I'm like, oh, whatever. But
But sometimes it ruins the flow of the comedy.
It ruins the flow. Uh-huh. But I found myself saying hooray for everyone a lot when I'm like, oh, whatever, hooray for everyone, which is Sam Pancake, 100%. Mm-hmm. You know, there are things that I take from friends that I'll be like, whatever. And Pete, our friend Pete Zayas, I don't know if you know Pete, but he's in the, you know, anyway, he calls people wig. He'll be like, bye, wig. Hey, wig. And he just calls people wig. And it's so funny. And we do that to each other. You know, you just take things from people. Mm-hmm. But I know, like, why are we so afraid of being wrong? It's so crazy that,
I don't know.
We're so afraid of not knowing everything. And now we have, like, fact checkers and all this stuff that, like, you know, which is great because we spit so much stuff out online so quickly now that, you know, you do want to make sure things are not, you know, that there's not, like, you know, libel happening. But it's weird how you're just in conversation and how it's... I have to consciously, like, say, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, or tell me about that. If I'm at a party and someone's talking about something, I either go, oh, I know a way to something to hook onto that, or I know more about that than you do, or I can add onto that, or I find a way to deflect it as opposed to going, I don't know about that. Tell me about that.
Yeah.
Why are we scared to, like, learn?
The current one for me is what you were talking about earlier in your intro, which is like you're less worried about white guys that are afraid of not being woke or whatever.
Yeah.
So they're trying to learn. But like, I have so many questions about if I were to write like a gay character or whatever, I would be terrified to do it just without asking. You know what I mean? Like I wouldn't just do it, even though maybe I should like just do it, you know?
Right.
And especially with the trans stuff going on, it's
absolutely.
Like, I have literally very little idea what's right and what's wrong about that what's respectful and what's not.
I have
not,
to ask
and like,
trans friends and anything. And I would always, if I was like going to write a character, I'd be like, well, I need to actually sit down with someone who is trans and ask lots of things, and also like hear, you know what they're going through and what the experience is, because we don't, but it's very scary to say, you know, and it's something that I
how
do
you
think,
pee?
Yeah, how do you be?
You know,
but it's
we need a nature hike with it where a trans person is walking through and being like, "Does anybody know how this vagina got hollowed out?"
I know how it got hollowed out.
But it's right. But I'm trying to be better at this. Is when I do talk to my grandparents, asking them questions, because they're not going to be around forever, and they know a lot about the world. They've been around for almost the entire. For almost a century. And so asking people, and I know, I want to say it was Shirley MacLaine that years ago somebody was talking to, and they said, what annoys you the most about young actors? And she's like, they don't ask me questions. They don't ever ask, they never ask, you know.
And she's been around for thousands of years.
Thousands.
Yes. She is a star in many ways. She's
literally.
A literal star. She's like, they just don't care. And it's true. There's an arrogance to like, I don't need to know that. There's like there's willful ignorance of like, I don't need to know what's come before me. And I get really irritated with, you know, that, you know, it's great. I always say this a lot when, you know, gay kids come out when they're 13 and 14, but when they think they don't need to know about Harvey Milk, to your point again, or gay history, because it doesn't really affect them. It's infuriating. You're like, nope, sit down, read a book and learn and be willing to say, I don't know. And there's nothing wrong with saying, I don't know, or I think I know, but maybe I'll be wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and we're so taught to act, you know, and it is the true thing of like, you won't finger anyone at the prom. You know, it's that thing of like, you will be forever known as the guy who thought that Roots burned out.
Yeah, because what if that was way off?
Yeah, I know.
And I said it out loud, and the park ranger was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that's what we think is going to happen.
Yeah.
We think that the park ranger is going to say, no, idiot, and everyone's going to laugh at you and point, and then the rest of your... You know, experience is going to be, you're going to be known as that, you know, the guy with the root theory.
Mm-hmm. Although I have found great comfort in the smart boxes we carry around for this particular reason.
Yeah.
Because if I don't know, I have an encyclopedia in my damn pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I go, hey, and everybody in the room goes, hey, I don't know. Everybody starts looking it up and everybody gains knowledge. I mean, assuming it's from a reliable source and not, you know, Breitbart. But, you know, that I find great comfort in that.
Yes.
Like, huh, let's look it up. I say it to my kids all the time. And like they'll sort of go, oh, mom. But then we'll look it up together.
Yep.
And I'll be that nerdy mom that starts reading to them. Yeah. Oh, well, Pocahontas really did this and did a ba 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 ba. And they're like, but they like it. And yeah. like, so it, yeah. it takes the burden off of,
yeah.
I wonder how that tree, you know, you could play, had you had a smartphone, you could have pulled it out of your pocket
oh,
and gone,
I know. Right.
How did tree root burn?
Yeah, exactly.
I like being able to say now, I don't know. I'm gonna find out in about 2.5 seconds.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I know.
The frustrating thing about the way our culture is going now, though, is like a lot of people don't want to hear what the real thing is. Like, because sometimes the real thing is a lot more uncomfortable than what they thought it
right.
was. Right,
or complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, or complicated.
You know, that's
yeah.
the thing, too. They're like, I just
Jesus
want a quick
being
answer.
Black, for example. You know right. what I mean?
Exactly.
People don't want to hear that.
They don't want to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And not this beautiful blonde, you know, painting I have in my church. That's not
right,
how
with the
I
blue
know.
Eyes. That's yeah, uh-huh. certainly but accurate.
But if you're like, let's look it up, and it's like completely proven that there's yeah, no way exactly. he could have been white. They're like, yeah. they're not going to be like, oh, thanks.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
Huh, we'll adjust that right now. Yeah. We're going to fix that to get my paints out.
Just paint over the top, because that right? won't be problematic on another. Just literally painting black face onto a white Jesus. And then being like, this is it, right?
With white lips.
Now what did I do wrong? White lips. Exactly. Exactly. And a top hat.
With the virgin.
What did I do
with
wrong?
With the virgin mammy.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I love it. Gina.
What?
Talk to me. Do you have a story? Or a revelation or a feeling?
I think
anything.
I have, I don't know if it's a rantelation.
I love it.
I would.
Holleration.
I can hollerate. Holla. I would love to know your perspective on this as the penises in the room.
Mm. Yes.
I have been on a bit of a social anthropological quest it's a quest now. But I have been doing my own sociological experiments in grocery stores.
Okay.
So when Noah said grocery store, it sent off a light bulb in my head because I have been on my own personal thing for the last couple of years. And it's this particular thing has gotten significantly worse in the past couple of years. It is the tendency for male employees in grocery stores to stop women unsolicited and ask them if they need help.
Hmm.
Ooh.
It happens constantly, not to men, because I have been standing in grocery store aisles. And I
have to flag down help. I have to look for it and go.
Yeah.
And most people don't want to engage with it. I have to go, excuse me. I don't work. I've never once had anybody at a grocery store ask me if I need help.
Oh, it happens.
I mean, retail stores are different because they're trying to sell you something.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. But this is like, this happens on a per aisle basis almost sometimes.
Wow.
I mean, they see tits and they it's usually, I have to applaud the millennials. It's usually men over 40.
Uh-huh.
It is not younger men who've been raised in a different way to appreciate
right.
that a woman can
to
think
women.
For herself and to fear women. Sure. Appropriately.
Yeah, no,
so,
should.
So,
yeah.
so I just did my own sort of a sociological experiments where I would go down an aisle, and if there was a worker there, I would just stand on that aisle and be perusing, Triscuits. If there's a man on that aisle, I would note whether or not that employee asked the man if he needed help.
Mm-hmm.
And asked me. So no, the man never got asked if he needed
wow.
help. And I would constantly get asked. I'm like, motherfucker, I am just shopping. I've been alive on this planet 45 fucking years.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to do this. I know exactly
and
what.
If anybody knows grocery stores, it's women. Like,
hello?
I mean, that's
yeah.
like, this. I go into a grocery store. I mean, I remember years ago telling a friend, calling me and saying, what are you doing? And I said, I'm at the grocery store. And he started laughing. And he's like, I can never imagine you in a grocery store.
Right.
You're like, well, I'm just wearing a Speedo.
So I've been doing this. I've noted this. And so then I had it about 8 months ago. I'm not kidding you. This happened. I had it when I was on the feminine hygiene product aisle. Mm-hmm. I'm not shitting you, looking at tampons. I am looking at tampons this is a personal thing for women because we know what works for us. We know what doesn't.
Yep, sure.
And I'm doing cost comparisons. I'm like, ooh, I'm loyal to my brand. Will I change? Man comes around the corner who works for the grocery store and says, can I help you? Oh. And I gave him the slow burn because you know I'm good at the slow burn.
Yeah,
oh, fucking dirty look, slow burn. I give him the slow burn and I had had it. And I went, really? You are going to help me with this? And it was because he was on autopilot. It didn't register. It
right.
was just because some corporate shit has told him ladies need help. Or that's just the culture, right? So he got this, he went white. He got this sheepish look on his face and he was like, oh, I'm so sorry. And he like ran away. So now, because it's, you know, it's indicative of this psychology that women need help and I gotta fix it. So I have started, you guys, I'm such an asshole, but I have started doing this when these older men ask me if I need help. I have like three go-tos. I'll be like, oh, I don't recall asking for help.
Ooh. Oh, that's good.
And then I heard the other bitchy one. Which works. If I need help, I'll ask.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's systemic of this idea that women are helpless, even in the fucking grocery store. When I am literally doing math in my head about what's the most cost effective for my family, whether my kids will actually eat this new product or else I'm going to throw it away in the garbage because they won't eat it because, you know, they're picky and they won't eat this particular brand. I'm doing math in my head. A lot of calculations are happening and then they ruin it all by going, can I help you? I'm like, no, you can leave me the fuck alone.
You can leave me alone. And, you know,
And the other one I have said, and I hate to call out the other men in the aisle because they weren't doing anything, but I have said, oh, I don't notice you asking that man if he needs help. And then they walk away too.
Right. Well, and the thing is, too, I know you, and I know you're not a knee jerk like, you know, I'm gonna be, you know, hate on men, or you're, that's so not your thing to be like. Oh, you're not like, you know.
No, I love men.
You, of course you do, and you also you're not the first one to say like, you know, women are disenfranchised, and what, you know, like you've noticed that this has happened to you, and this is something that's come like, you know, like. On top of you. It's not just like you've just, you know, sought out the problem and you're always looking for that. And
right.
that's just, it's so crazy to think that like, that how many things we have inside that we just go, oh, that's a woman. I need to help her.
It's,
in this situation.
The thing that's fascinating about that is like, that's the, like the street level. That's like the, for not to belittle the experience, but like, that's the like minor, you know, infraction of something
right.
that is so systemic.
That's the micro level.
Yeah. That is so systemic
right.
that like,
of
when
women
Hillary
can't
Clinton,
think for themselves.
When Hillary right. Clinton runs for office, men are like, she doesn't think she needs my help, so she's a bitch.
Right.
So it's like if...
Well, and...
but if
and,
she did need your help, she's not fit to run for office.
Exactly.
Right.
So there's
she's not
no
strong
way to,
enough.
Yeah, there's nowhere to go.
She can't win.
So
and
that's...
the, you know, the amount of the... And it, and talk about generationally, too, the amount of... There's so many women that hated Hillary Clinton for that for
absolutely.
The reason. Because, again, it's like, who does she think she is?
Right.
Just like we talk about your family, it's like, you know, the amount of people that are like, her voice is really, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the people that said, well, I lost respect for her when she stayed with Bill Clinton. I'm like, had she left her husband, you would have
railed her for that.
You railed her for that?
Yeah.
Like, it's something that had nothing to do with her. Something that she didn't do, like, she had no control over what her husband did. And yet...
Her husband doesn't have control over what her husband did.
I know. He's made that very clear. And it's like, so, but yeah, they look at women in power and they do say, she's a bitch. I wish Hillary was more of a bitch. I wish she came in and said, this is how I'm going to get shit done.
Yeah.
She vacillated a little. And I loved her and I voted for her, but she vacillated too much.
That's why Senator Warren is so fun, because she is like
awesome.
I am
the
bitch.
Greatest. Yes.
I wanted her to be a bitch on wheels and she would cave a little bit and I'm like, stop it. And
well,
stop
problem,
saying you're sorry.
The
she
problem
said,
I had
I'm
with,
sorry so much.
Yeah, the issues I had with Hillary was when she was saying, you know, it's like, I'm a mother, I'm a grandmother. Mm. It's like, quit. Like, great. We know that's true about you.
Yeah.
But that's not like you're weirdly like speaking to people that need that for a woman to be valid as a
right.
mother. Oh, she's a mother.
People,
oh, she's valid then.
And those
as
people aren't going to vote for her anyway. The people
right.
that you're saying I'm a mother to get their vote are not going to vote for you.
Right.
If
exactly.
You know what I mean? It's
and,
like,
and also I'm
I'd
like,
rather you
oh,
attack
here,
the other
you
guy.
You are the most qualified person for this job. Let's hear about it. Mm-hmm. How are you going to do it? Because you know how to do it. You know what you're doing. So quit pandering to, you know, yes, let's say, you know, I'm sorry, or quit sticking up for, you know, you know, horrible, you know, other women, Nancy Reagan, I'll say it, you know, just to get other people to like you, you know, yeah. what I mean, to get these awful older, you know, men of this age and this era to like you. It's like, no, you can be in charge. And yes, it is crazy that like, it's always a problem. But mm-hmm. the woman thing is always going to be an issue, you know, that people are threatened.
Until they start, and I tell you, I know I'm a grassroots example, but that's where you have to start. Until you start looking at the grocery clerks and saying, did I ask for help? Mm-hmm. Until mm-hmm. you start doing that, and then it builds up. And
yes.
then my
yes.
daughter gets so embarrassed, but I do it in front of her on purpose. Because I'm like, sweetheart, I need you to be braver.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I need you to be braver.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then it starts in the grocery store, but then it starts going to other places. Like,
right.
no,
you absolutely.
No, I don't need you. I can think for myself.
Right.
Stop
right.
doing that.
Right.
You know?
And we, you know, hopefully can get to some point where we can, in certain ways, show each other how we're being clumsy or how we mm-hmm. do something without it starting World War III. You know, and in a way mm-hmm. of saying, look, don't do that to a woman in the grocery store, so therefore don't do that in life, you know?
Or yeah.
this, maybe you'll think twice before you see a woman, you know, in a different situation
right.
thinking, oh,
right.
she probably needs my help.
My daughter.
No, if I'm actively bleeding on aisle 4, please.
You yeah. didn't ask for help.
Just call the ambulance.
Yeah.
It's fine.
And tampons are now at 5. Like, obviously, you need help. But my daughter's 3.5, and she is pretty bossy. She's also extremely, I'm saying this as a father, but also somewhat objectively, a very, very sweet and very, like, level. Like, she has a lovely heart already, mm-hmm. I can tell. Mm-hmm. But she's also can be very bossy on the playground.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had people say to me, like, oh, she's a little bossy, right? And I'm like, well, guess what? She's going to stay that way until mm-hmm. it becomes yeah. too much of a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not going to tell her to bow to some boy on the
Thank
playground.
You.
Like, she can figure out on her own
Thank you, brother.
How far she can take that.
Right.
Because
exactly.
if she starts doing it a lot and starts losing friends and realizes I don't have any friends, then I want her to be able to self-correct that. But I'm not
right.
going to walk up to her and say, give him his toy. Like,
right.
no.
Yeah,
he
exactly.
can take. He can try and take that toy from
exactly.
you. You know
exactly.
what I mean?
Exactly. And know that, you know, things
it's not going to come
and
from me.
Right.
I'm
right.
not going to tell
right.
it about him.
Right. And it's something that, like, you know, it's crazy to, because, like, my brother's, my niece just turned 6, and she is this ball of fire, force of nature.
Mm-hmm.
And she's both. I mean, she's a princess. She loves very girly things, and she's way into this, like, fantasy land. They just took her to, my niece and nephew, who is 10, to Disney World, Florida. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's all about that as well, but she's also so strong, and I can do anything, and she's the one, you know.
Love it.
The 10-year-old boy is like the quiet, sweeter one who's like in his room
mm-hmm.
reading and, you know, and sort of, you know, playing video games and a lot, you know, and she's like gone. Like, where did she go? She's running through the neighborhood. Oh, get her back in. You know, she's just,
yeah.
she's just very strong-willed. But still, there's something that takes over, because when they took her to see Ghostbusters the last year, they've been watching Ghostbusters. They love the cartoon. Mm-hmm. They love the original movie. So when they saw the remake of Ghostbusters, just my brother said that the her connecting that and just looking at him and saying, it's girls. It's Ghostbusters and they're girls. And like, I can be a Ghostbuster too. And like, just showing that mm-hmm. example was so huge for her. And Garrett's like, I had no idea that we've never done anything in this house to be like, women can't do this
right.
and women are this
right.
way and men are this way. But because she's in this world,
mm-hmm.
she sees like, oh, I'm, you know, and she was 5 then. And she's like, I'm 5 years old and already like, I'll have less opportunities. And then she sees these Ghostbusters. She's like, well, I can do that too. Oh,
yeah.
cool. Good to know.
That's why I'm kind of happy my daughter's so young that when Trump won, because I don't want her to internalize what happened.
Yeah.
I don't want her to know that like exactly what went on
yeah.
and that our country picked. Well, they didn't, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I don't want to tell her what happened because I want him gone and then I
yeah.
can tell her when she's older and she, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Exactly.
Because representation is everything.
Yeah,
because my daughter is 10 and she absolutely watched it all and she cried with me and
yeah.
it broke
yeah.
my heart.
It's devastating.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
Ugh.
Well, and you know, I and what I was saying with such optimism up until, you know, November 8th. But I do believe it's still really, I still think it's a huge thing, was that my nephew was born right when Barack Obama took office. And so for 8 years, he was, you know, he thought his idea of a president was a black man. Like,
yeah.
He never knew a white president. And I was like, that person now is he
grew up knowing
little
that
man. He's like, right. He's 3 years away from, you know, being a teenager. And he's, you know, so he is, I'm sorry, he's nine. If my mother's listening, I'm sorry. I do know how old my niece and nephew are. So he's 4 years from being a teenager. I get it. But anyway, but like, I'm just saying, like, he has seen, that's shaped his world, you
yeah.
know, like in a really great way. And
now he knows a black man can take any one of his jobs.
Exactly.
Even president.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, dear Lord.
But,
but a woman still can't get it.
Yeah, a woman right. still can't get it.
There
is still a problem with the woman.
Stand-up in me that has that, like, when conversation is so, like, progressive and stuff, which I totally believe and agree with and whatever.
Of course.
There's
sure.
that reactionary just like, oh, but I got to say the wrong thing.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
You
of
know
course.
What I mean? It's like,
well, you have
you
to say
it.
Harvey Milk and I have to go, well, that's gross. It's just what I find. You
well,
know,
it's a gross name for a school. Milk.
Milk
Don't name
school.
Your...
Milk school.
Milk is gross.
It's the worst, especially at school.
Yeah.
My memories of milk at school are not great. I don't really have any good ones. But yeah, no, it's.
Oh.
Yes, sir. I was just going to say, like, for kids, like, to see what's going on in the world, it's mm-hmm. got to be so horrifying as a parent.
Mm-hmm.
And also important for them to see at the same time.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is that, I'm oddly Pollyanna-ish about the big picture. Right now sucks, but I'm oddly Pollyanna-ish
Me
about
too.
The
Me
big
too.
Picture because
yes.
we...
Wait, what does that mean? I'm going to learn from today and ask. I don't know what you mean by that.
Pollyanna was... Because I'm old. Pollyanna was this girl in the, what, 70s, 60s? 60s, who was this cockeyed optimist. She was optimistic
okay.
about everything, even though crappy
Haley
things
Mills,
happened to her.
Jane Wyman.
Oh, mm-hmm. yeah.
She was a little asshole, really, but yeah.
Yeah, she was and
yeah.
fell out of that damn tree.
Yeah,
but she was always looking on the bright side of life.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, sort of in my cockeyed optimist way, all of this stuff has to come to a head
mm-hmm.
because we have got to flush the shit out.
Yeah.
You know
yep.
what I mean?
Yep. Like in a bad breakup where you break up like four times, the last one is so bad.
Yeah.
The last fight is like so bad.
Yeah, and all of this, you know, and it's happening worldwide. You know, it's obviously happening worldwide
mm-hmm.
where these just
yep.
old white male assholes know that they're losing power.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're doing everything they can to
just, hang
on. And they're
going
to be as awful as they can
yeah,
until the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, until they take their last gasp. And mm-hmm. I'm like, sorry, we got to fight it. And
yeah,
we are.
And, we are.
And
we
at
are.
Least our daughters are living in the world where they're watching us stand mm-hmm. up and fight, you know?
And it's good to be about something. It's horrible to go through it, but it's really good to,
mm-hmm.
you know, it is inspiring to see that, you know, protests and the people and the things getting shut down, like you're not able to like just like run over us before.
Yeah,
and,
you can't walk all over.
You know,
people.
And you know, it's like we thought, you know, it was bad with, you know, Bush, and now we're like, oh, we
he was actually okay.
That, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, and I also yeah, I feel like ultimately we're gonna have to be okay. We're gonna have to fight for it. We're gonna
yeah.
fight to be okay.
Yeah.
And but that's we have to look at that as like. What it means to be alive. And it's
mm-hmm.
not, we don't, and again, talk about privilege, you know, how nice for us that things have been handed to us. And it'd be a lot easier if Hillary was our president right now. It'd be easier for all of us to just get up and go on with our days. But is that necessarily better long term? Are we going to look back on our generation and be proud of what we did
because right.
we just accepted things that were given to us? Or are we going to look back and go, we all fought. We fought to stay on this planet,
mm-hmm.
which is literally what we're doing. And I think we have to... we have to look at it positively. I get really when people are too doom and gloom. It's like, well, you know, that's just you can be that way about anything, and you it's
oh cynicism is so boring and
it's so boring.
It's so 90s.
So 90s. It's we get it. It's so runaway train.
Well, you know, like it's so runaway. You can trip the march of progress, but you can't stop it. You
absolutely.
Know that whole thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So your kids are how old?
10.
Are we allowed to crosstalk in this?
Yeah, let's do it.
How old are they?
Oh, my God. What's Holly been doing?
My daughter is going to be 11 in June, so she's almost 11, and my son is 7.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Do you ever feel bad about when you see your kids' friends and you really don't like them?
Yes, but it's it just is... It is what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them are just not.
That's such a good question. I
feel
that.
So bad
question.
That I only love my own kid. You know, I like other ones sometimes, but a lot of times I'm like, I can't stand any of these other kids. Mm-hmm. And it makes me feel really bad.
I know. But then both of my kids have some really sweet friends, too, that mm-hmm. I'm just like, wow, I hope this relationship lasts for as long as you're in school with these kids, because they're
and
so
And yours are
wonderful.
A little bit older, Gina, than yours, Julian. And so, like, maybe when they get older, they'll, you know.
That's true, too. You do watch the bad kids morph sometimes. I've watched some bad kids morph, and luckily their parents.
And become better.
Yeah. And I've watched their parents really sort of take that on, you know, actively.
You also see those kids crystallize into, into evil kids. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
And you were like, I knew it about that kid.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember growing up, and I remember, that, you know, when as an adult talking to my parents about, like, how, like, I always hated your friend so-and-so because they were, and I always knew they were a bully or they were just, there was something really evil about them in some way. And you're like, oh, yeah.
Oh, you mean little Damien?
Exactly. Sweet little Damien.
Who knew?
Yeah. But, yeah, it's, you know, I've wondered that. I've also wondered about, like, there's got to be a fear as a parent of, like, liking your kids. I mean, I'm sure you're like, you know, you're going to love your kids, but you're like, do I, you know, I hope I have kids that I like, that
no,
I want to, you know.
I'm tremendously lucky. I like my kids to pieces. Mm-hmm. They're amazing and interesting.
I met them the other night. They were lovely.
They're amazing and interesting and funny.
And immediately I could see two different personalities. Mm-hmm. You immediately get it. You know, like, oh, that's so really great. And I love and like my brothers and sister-in-law's kids, you know, equally, which is nice because, you know, you see some kids and you're like, you're just annoying. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's nothing wrong. Of course, I'm going to love you because you're mine, but ugh.
Yeah.
Don't be irritating.
Yeah, it's like, what if they just didn't have any charisma?
Right.
Like, I just have to just barrel through and love this thing.
Sorry, you're not very engaging.
And there are a lot of, I mean, look at, and I know that they're not always raised well at all, but a lot of, like, children of celebrities, you're like these stars that you love and their children are just awful. And
Chet
you're like,
Hayes.
What? You know, who?
Chet Tom Hanks rapper kid.
Oh. There you go.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, the classic example is like Joan Crawford and Betty Davis's children are like, which were the worst human beings ever that wrote.
No.
I know, believe it or not. But at least Joan Crawford and Betty Davis, you know, were tortured and awful, but they were awesome. And they were like, really talk about tough ladies and, you know, mm-hmm. and talent and fire and music. And they had all of that. And they're both of their children turned into these lying shills of human beings that wrote tell-all books that were just lies about their mothers.
That's terrible.
Both of them did. And, you know, and you're like, oh, how did you make that? And granted, you spend your days at the studio and on slimming programs instead of going to the park, and that's what happens. But still, you just wonder, like, oh my gosh, I just hope you don't get, or, you know, yeah, you just think about those, like, those true Damians, and they're like, what if I had that was my kid?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes, and I do think it's nature and nurture. I really do. I think sometimes it's like, there is just sometimes a chemical, you know, it's not
my
always a parent's
fault. My friend
has
one, and it's so hard because it's my friend, and she's dealing with a really tough kid with psychological issues.
So scary.
And it's so hard.
And there's also on that level, but it's like, you know, Or just somebody who's just really boring, really dull.
Oh, my kids are boring.
Like the kid that you're all riffing, and then he says the last joke, and it kills the riff.
No,
and you're
no,
like,
I'm the
kill the riff kid.
Oh no,
kill the riff kid. Bobby, we need to talk to you about time.
Yeah,
we passed that joke six
Bobby.
Jokes ago.
Couple things. I'm gonna sit you
couple
down
notes,
with some books and
notes.
Movies.
This is
really
very hard
it.
To teach, but we're gonna try.
Look, your parents are comedians. You have to be good at this. You're gonna be deeply disappointed if you're not zinging it out, Bobby.
Although, you know, I do have to say also, it's not to say that I think my kids are perfect.
Of course not.
You know,
No. Those are
very
different things.
They're not.
Of course.
You know, they're not perfect. I love them to pieces, but I do also think they're kick-ass human beings. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? with, you know, flaws. We're all
of
flawed.
Of course,
we're all flawed.
We're
working through our
junk. All doing that. Yeah, exactly. And no. That's always suspect, too, when it's like you think your kid's perfect.
Oh,
you're
I've heard people say it. I've heard parents say it, and I'm like, uh-oh.
No. Well, there's entire school districts in Los Angeles that suffer from that.
Yeah, no, I know. So. And and then when, you know, when I've gotten to deal with them as adults in, you know, improv classes, and I'm like, you had parents that supported you too much.
Yeah.
You had parents that told you you could do no wrong. Uh-huh. You know, I'm trying to give you constructive criticism and you're sobbing right now. And you're like, oh, you needed a little bit more. Maybe you should have been thrown into a trash can once in seventh grade. So you could at least
fall your way out.
And like you said, be tougher. Mm-hmm. I think that's such good parenting to say you have to be tougher right now. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was something I remember as a kid hating it when my parents would make me fight my own battles. I'm like, why won't you jump in and defend me? And they wouldn't. And I do appreciate that. That was a really good thing.
Man, I am going to have to work on that. That is really tough to let my daughter struggle.
It's got
to
be.
I know.
It's
got to be really, really hard to do.
I just hope I can catch it. Like, it's so, you do it so fast, you don't even realize that you're helping them too much. Mm-hmm. You know?
Uh-huh. And sometimes it's, I'm sure, out of just pure convenience. You're like, let me do this for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me help you.
Yeah. Right.
It'll save us all time.
Right, exactly. And sometimes it's just exactly what we should be doing. And then, but I'm amazed at my brother and sister-in-law's patience to like stop a moment and teach something.
Like, That's really hard on Red Bull, by the way.
You know, oh my God, I can't imagine. Well, we were just, growing up, it was, you never asked why. You were never allowed to ask why.
Right.
And so, and my brother and I both, it's why we both do what we do with our lives. I'm like, I'm going to be asking why for my job, essentially. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be, and my brother's like, as a parent, I'm going to do my best to explain, which is maddening and and just so heroic of my brother and sister-in-law to do that. And they do. They will stop and go, here's the reason why we don't do this, and this is why you shouldn't say this, and you know, or you know, and yeah.
Man.
One time my daughter was it was in kindergarten, and there was a couple of bullies in her kindergarten class. There were a couple of bullies, and I knew it was happening. The teachers had talked to us about it, and you know how they were dealing with it. It was great. The school handled it in a great way. But Olivia, my daughter, she would come to me and go, "Mommy, you know, this kid is doing this, this, and this." And it was everything I could to not run to the school and
You
know,
of course,
beat the crap out of the kid and the parents. But I calmed down and I said, "Do you want me to do anything?" So I asked her. Mm-hmm. I said, "Do you want me to do anything, talk to the parents, whatever?" And she goes, "No, Mommy, no. Stay out of it."
Wow.
And I was like, "Good. Good." Yeah. And I took that to heart, and it worked itself out. Uh-huh. I trusted that the school was doing the right thing. I trusted that it was all working out, and it was great.
Right. Mm. And maybe she just needed to, she just wanted to vent and gossip and, you know, and share with you, you know, but it wasn't like, you know, and that's good on her to know to like, oh, you know, because,
But she also knew I had her back.
Yes.
That's the other thing, too. I think kids just want to know that you have their back.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything, but, you know, maybe your daughter just needs to know you're there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. For when it's like really necessary to be there. And that's when you do have to step in and do something. But it's like pick your battles and not be like every time.
Yeah.
Well, for sure. We haven't had that problem because I stay with her at school all day right next to her.
Oh, you're that guy.
That might be a problem for several reasons. You're finishing all of her projects.
Yeah.
Just making things, Play-Doh. And like, look what, you know. Like
you're getting close to the line, baby. You might want to color a little less aggressively towards the line there. It's fine.
With a giant Red Bull.
Yeah.
Just like, here we go. Let's get this done. Well, you guys, we're out of time.
That was wonderful.
What? That was so fun.
It was so much fun. I loved this.
That
was
so great. And I learned what I'm doing wrong as a parent at the last 5 minutes. So
stop going to school. Julian, just find something else to do with your life.
Okay,
or get a decent disguise.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Dress
big hat,
like a 3-year-old.
Sunglasses outside the school.
I'll go as Elsa next time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that won't draw any attention from the 3-year-olds at all. I want to thank Gina Torricella and Julian McCullough for being on the show today.
Now, can I tell you one thing?
What?
It's actually Taurasia.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And we're in a play together and I never knew it was Taurasia.
No, but that's okay because a lot of people think it's Italian, so they put the ch in there, but it's actually Spanish.
It's Spanish.
So, Taurasia.
Taurasia. I've never known that. And
that's
we've been
okay.
in a play together since January.
I know.
If you're
okay.
in LA, come and see Gina and myself in Die Mommy Die. At the
oh, it's amazing.
Theater.
Drew Drogi is going to make you piss yourself. That's all I want to say.
Gina Taurasia mm-hmm. is
it's
a
actually,
national treasure.
It's actually Droge.
It's Droge.
Droge.
I have people that have said that before, Droge, and I don't correct them, but I'm like, what a garbage bag I would be if I was like, hi, I'm Drew Droge. Ugh. Calm down. And yours is McCullough.
You got it right. You got
McCullough.
Yes.
It's McCullough.
Yeah.
Because I think I said McCullough at the beginning of the show, and I was like, I think it's just the, it's the, take the,
I'm and just happy to be here, Drew.
I get it. I get it. Just, we're all just happy to be here. And happy
well, you
to
were
be
fun, Bob. You were
represented.
Really
We'll work you on your punchlines, because, you know, or what was the kid's name? Bobby? Was that the kid
Bobby.
That had bad punchlines? I don't remember his name. Anyway. Anyway. All right.
Can well. I plug you one more time?
Oh, my God.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yes, always.
You guys, I'm not kidding you. You have to come and see Die Mommy Die for many reasons. But to hear Drew Droege say New York, I'm not going to give it away, is worth the price of admission. Okay, just trust me. It's worth the price of admission.
Well, thank you. Please come check it out. It's a lot of fun. It's just pure, stupid joy.
Ridiculous.
And we get to do it tonight.
I know.
We're on stage together tonight.
I'm so
I love
excited.
It. Well, thanks for listening, you guys. This has been another episode of Drew Droege's Minor Revelations. Happy week.
Feral Audio.